Hello there. My name is Chris Cook and welcome to TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 weeks Edinburgh. We are at Edinburgh Festival 2024, sitting in the lounge at Assembly George Square, right next to the club bar and all the studio venues. The festival is very much happening around us as we speak, and I am chatting to comedians who are performing at this year's Fringe. Today, Katie Green, whose Fringe show this year is described as, and I quote, a story about identity, family, coming of age, terrible dating choices, and throwing the best damn party ever. We are going to talk past, present, and future, the story so far, this year's show, and what is happening next. So I am still here at Edinburgh Festival 2024 in a actually quite dark corner, I've just realised, of Assembly George Square, given it's so sunny outside. But anyway...
Yeah, it does sound nice and calming, though.
It is, that's true, isn't it? We're away from the hustle and bustle of George Square. My next guest has joined me to talk about their show at Edinburgh 2024. Katie Green is here. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're definitely going to talk about this year's show. That's really why we're here. But yes, we're going to do past, present and future.
Okay.
So before we get to this year's show, let's talk us through your journey in as a performer. Where did it all begin?
So I started doing acting classes near San Francisco, and someone in the class was like, you're not amazing at this, but you should try stand-up. And then so I did like a stand-up course, and there's like, I didn't know anything about comedy before. Like I didn't.
Wow, so it was literally from that person saying, if you want to be a performer, do comedy.
Exactly that. I had no idea about stand-up. I thought like the first day of the course, people were talking about Jerry Seinfeld. And I thought they were talking about Jerry Springer. So I was really confused.
The Jerry in the room.
Yeah. And I was like, why?
Any comedy fan, we know which Jerry they're talking about. I think I would think Jerry Halliwell from Spice Girls if it was just Jerry.
Right. But then I was like, why is this guy, like, is he that funny? Is he that funny? And I'm like, oh, I've got this terribly wrong. And then I tried it a few times and I was like, oh, this is fun. And so it became an outlet. And then it wasn't until like the last 2 years of college where I actually was like, this is probably something that I would like to continue to do. Because I dappled in it a bit. And
so you did this. I'm also just, when people say they went on a stand-up comedy course, what even that means? What is it that you
well,
do?
Well, it's exactly that. Because I was quite young. So I was about 19. And, you know, most of my mics were in bars. So you needed to be 21. So I was using a fake ID to do stand-up, which is so bizarre, so bizarre. And it was basically the course, that one specifically, was just kind of like getting you comfortable being on stage. And it sort of served its purpose. Like it was nice to have a community of people, especially being so young and not really knowing about the art form. And I think you can't teach comedy though. It was all trial and error. So you'd go up there and people would get feedback and be like, this is really good, or try more of this. And so it was just maybe like collaborative stuff.
Yeah, I know people who've done this, of course, and they say almost it's kind of confidence and discipline is almost what they can give you.
Yeah.
You then have to bring the comedy.
Exactly.
Yourself.
Exactly that. And so it wasn't, it was helpful, but it wasn't something that was like, they really like, I wouldn't suggest doing a course. I think it's good if you need something to be like, how do I get into this? Or it's also nice because it gives you a little bit of community before going into the open mics. And because open micing can be so daunting, especially when you're alone. But yeah, and then that's basically how it started.
So you then started doing the open mics. You were still a student at this point.
Yes, I was still a student. And then I was in community college, and then I transferred to UCLA. And I did shows on campus there, which was really fun. Again, good community. But it wasn't so serious until those last 2 years where I was like, I've got to kind of figure. Like my last year, my bachelor's degree and my first year of my master's, where I was like, what's next? And so I was like, okay, comedy will have to be it.
So at that first session where you'd gone because someone told you go and do comedy, quite a lot of the stand-up greats, it sounds like, were new to you.
Yes.
So in terms of then discovering the art form, as well as doing the open mic night, did you then sort of, you know, jump into that world to see what's out there?
I did. I used to go to the library and get the comedy albums on CDs.
The classic era of the comedy album.
Yeah. And this makes me sound so much older than I am. But it's just because my car was really old. So
you still had a CD.
So I still had the CD player. And it was great. Mitch Hedberg, both of the albums that were available at the library, at the San Bruno Public Library. I played those regularly. Jim Gaffigan, I used to play a lot. So it was cool kind of discovering comedy for the first time, but also like doing it and not really having anyone that I was mimicking. Because a lot of comics, when they come in, they like try to be the
yeah, there will be two or three that there are some comedians I've seen at this festival where, and they're really good, but it's sort of like, yeah, you're a very big fan of that comedian, almost a plagiarism fandom of that.
Yes, exactly that.
So I guess you were already finding your own voice as you were discovering those other greats.
Right. And also my own style and like what I wanted to talk about. And so that was a really cool experience, I would say. But I also like watching live comedy for the first time. Like Gerard Carmichael was the first comic I watched where I was like, whoa, like this is like next level. And I was like before he was really big. So it was really cool to be a young fan of this new thing that I had no idea about.
So you said it was about 2 years ago where you decided this thing you'd started doing at college and doing the overnight nights, actually, no, this is something I want to do.
No, it was about two years, those last 2 years of college. So it's been about 7 years or so where it's been like the forefront of what, and like moving to the UK was a big, big thing for me to be like, okay, this is what I want to do. Like, let's pursue it.
Before we get on to the UK bit, so in those latter part of college, what was it that made you think, actually, this isn't just something I enjoy doing as a pastime? Do you know what? This could be my career.
I think it was mostly I didn't have anything else to do. I think my bachelor's was in European studies with a minor in theater, so not very marketable. And then my master's degree was in Latin American studies, which is equally not marketable. And I think I just had this, I knew I wanted to perform, but I think comedy was just my favorite outlet. And so whereas from the time period when I first started in that course, and then the time in which I decided to take it seriously, I took lots of breaks, maybe like a year of not going on stage or like dabbled in it every now and again, but then I still kind of felt drawn to it. So I think that's when I was properly like, let's figure out if I can do it.
I think it's interesting for people starting out in comedy. Obviously, there's lots of people who be at this festival who actually that is. When it is like, okay, I'm going to start taking this seriously.
Yeah.
It's like, what does that mean in practical terms? Are you looking for more opportunities to be doing short sets? Is it thinking about doing, you know, fuller 1 hour shows? What is the process you go through in making this? Actually, do you know what? This is who I am. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I think that varies on the place. I think in LA, it was open micing all the time. So I was open micing when I wanted to take it seriously. It was like 6 times a week, 7 times a week, something like I would actively try to open mic. I was in, and those were days of open micing in LA is brutal. So you'll do the lottery and like you'll wait for about 2 hours and you might never get called. And I was writing and I was constantly trying to make it be like, this is, there was no free time. It was like, I did my work, whatever that was, university or my job. And then I would do stand up. That was it. And I think that's when it was like, because stand-up is all repetition. It's all just going up, getting out there,
working and I guess through that process, A, getting better.
Yes.
But B, just making those connections and getting into that network that gets you the next opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then the move to the UK, tell us about that.
So my lease was up in LA and I was done with the university and I wanted to find a city that was... LA was great, but I couldn't find myself. It was really hard for me to understand who I was because of everything else that's going on. LA is just like so big. Everyone's doing everything. And so I wanted a city where I could really focus on myself. And London, I'd always wanted to move because my grandpa's British, and I thought the comedy scene is just one of the best in the world. I think after New York, it is the best. And yeah, and so that's when I was really like, I've come here for this. So it really shaped my career in a way because.
And when was that?
2019-ish is when I first came to see, I'd go to shows or see if I liked the scene. And then September 2020 is when I officially moved, which is arguably the worst time.
Yeah, so you arrived in London, comedy's your aim, comedy's in shutdown.
Comedy's in full-on shutdown, yep. Yeah, so I came over initially with doing an acting program. So I still trying. I did a master's in acting, and it was cool because it still allowed me to focus on the comedic element of it, especially in a time of lockdown. And then there would be pop-up shows, outdoor shows were getting popular. The social distance shows were getting popular. During that time period, I did the Funny Women finals, and that was on Zoom. So, that was a good opportunity despite the world shutting down. So it was slowly but surely. And then when things started opening up more, I was like full, like gigging as much as I can.
Yeah. So that was the point at which, right, you've made the commitment, you're doing this seriously. The world's now able to help you make that happen.
Right.
Yeah. Let's quickly talk about the Funny Women thing. I mean, first of all, just talk us through how that came about and how that helped. And then I'm particularly interested in the Zoom element because obviously that's still a bit weird. So
the Funny Women comedy competitions is a great opportunity for women. Especially it was a great opportunity for me because I was new to the country. And during that year, they did all the semifinals and basically until the finals all on one tape, whatever your submission tape was. And the semifinals, getting this all confused, was on Zoom. The finals was in an empty comedy store. The only people in the audience were the other finalists and the judges. That was very hard.
Well, I know, because I spent a lot of my life in the music industry, and obviously that was a really, really difficult time for the music industry as well. And obviously bands don't like playing to empty rooms, but bands can play to empty rooms.
Yes.
Whereas for comedy,
right,
it's like there is a big crucial bit of the art form missing.
It's soul destroying. And also what was hard is because the tape that I submitted for was from the comedy store, but King Gong, it's a sold out room. Also King Gong, have you been?
Yes.
Yes, it's brutal, but also winning is, there's no other euphoria. And to go from that to relative silence, you know, it was hard. It was really hard.
But still an experience, particularly for where you were at that time.
It was amazing. Yeah. To be in the finals was, it did really help my career, and also was my first credit in the UK and kind of gave me some type of thing to be like, hey, I've done this. And so that did help booking. Yeah, for sure.
And then after that, and once the world was back, then just performing regularly in London became a big part of growing things forward.
Yeah, it took over my life for sure. I think the American work ethic, it kind of, it's detrimental in terms of all I did was comedy. All my friends were comedy. Everything was surrounded, and it still is, which I need to work on. That's on the to-do list, very low, but it's on there. It's all encompassing. I was all hanging out. I was gigging. I mean, I still gig probably around 10, 11 times a week on average, which is a lot. But I loved it. I loved it. And I had nothing else to do.
Let's talk about your Edinburgh journey now.
Okay.
So I guess when you were in the US, how aware of the Edinburgh Fringe were you?
I had come over a few times to, I used to spend like summers, a few summers in a row, I came over because I have extended family who live in London. And I saw a few comics, like Sean Walsh was probably one of my first UK comics where I was like, whoa, this guy's amazing. And it's so cool to gig with him now. Actually, I don't think he knows that. But I think I have one of his DVDs. I know I do have one of his DVDs. That was modest of me. I do. It also doesn't even play in America because of the different differences. But I was like, this is great. And I came to the Fringe once on a London trip. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. This is nothing in the world like it. I saw a lot of comics for the first time. And I went to a lot of free Fringe shows. And just like any normal punter, just getting a flyer and being like, wow, it was really cool to see. So I've been aware of it. But then the longer you're in the UK scene, the more of it like, oh, are you going to go to Edinburgh? Yeah, are you going to every...
It's what you do in August.
That's what you do in August. Everyone always asks. It's always a big thing. So this was... Doing the debut is stressful. This would have been my second Edinburgh because, I did a short work in progress last year with a friend, Dee Allen, very great comic. And so I did the Pleasance Reserve 2 years ago. And that was amazing because it was like the first experience into the festival. But doing it alone is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, so let's talk about this year's show. And I guess, first of all, let's talk about the premise of the show. Tell us about the show, and then we can talk about that challenge of that first hour here in Edinburgh.
So my show is called Aimija. That translates from Spanish into, oh, my daughter. It's a term of endearment, and it's also what my grandma calls me, Mija. And the show is about my identity, about my coming of age, and about my quinceañera, and also being a late bloomer. So it's basically most of it, the structure of the show is about my coming of age, but it's just in most of my jokes until this point of time.
Well, I guess that's why. So is it very much drawing on the sets that you performed in recent years?
Yeah, a lot of it is.
And what process did you go through into then taking all of those bits of past routines and then turning it into a cohesive 1 hour?
So it was quite bizarre because I feel like the first few times working it out, I was just getting used to being on stage for the hour. And then actually putting in a narrative for me was the hardest thing because it's so abnormal. I'm used to doing sets and I'm used to just jokes. And then having that, like putting it all into one thing, I don't think I accomplished until maybe 2 days before I got here. But then all the jokes kind of aligned with everything. So the process, it was an intense and a fun process, challenging, of course, but a lot of trial and error in terms of where things go and what stays. And it was nice that I had like quite a Rolodex of jokes to pull from that I still kind of like.
Plenty of a big reservoir of elements to sort of pull together.
Yeah, there weren't many jokes. Any jokes that are newer in the hour are just jokes that I wrote probably because that was writing, not necessarily written. There's probably about 10 minutes of the show that's like written just for the show. So, which is nice.
And with the theme, was it that you started pulling together the material that you really liked and then the theme was there? Or did you say, actually, you know what, this is the story I want to tell. Let's pull the relevant bits of my previous routines to fit that.
It was this is a story that I wanted to tell. I think I wanted to do a show about my Latin identity, especially because being in the UK, it feels a lot that I've lost that a bit. And I find it very important for me to always embrace that, and especially in places where I don't feel like, or I feel maybe underrepresented or I don't feel as much cultural connections. So I knew that's what I wanted the main element of the show to be. And that's why I've decided to do a show title in Spanish, despite, you know, Scotland's not the best place.
Not that many Spanish speakers.
Not that many. I've noticed. So yeah, and then the elements just quite fit. It's about my coming of age and a quinceañera. So it's a kind of all, most of my stuff kind of fits in between identity and womanhood and dating. So it's basically just fitting in what goes. Yeah.
If we look to the future, so do you have future plans specifically for this show?
Yeah, so I would like to tour eventually. A few UK cities and then the US. I also, as soon as this month is over, I'm going to start translating the show. So I'd like to be able to do it in Spanish, and then that help with the tour as well.
And have you done lots of comedy in Spanish over the years?
No, I've only really just started in the last year or so. And it's very hard.
Interesting, isn't it? And are you, obviously you're talking about translating this show, when you've done bits in Spanish language before, is it you doing your English routine in Spanish, or actually do you think, are there different jokes you want to tell?
A bit of both, because my personality is different. Some of the jokes translate easily, and then some jokes, you know, I'm a different person. I have it from a perspective of somebody who is Latin heritage, yeah, but also not, like, sometimes my language skills are not as good as they should be. So it's that kind of element of being like, oh no. So it's a challenge. And
that's definitely on the to-do list.
It's on the to-do list. And so I'm excited about that. And then after Spanish, I speak Portuguese. So after Spanish, I'll do Portuguese, which will be not easier, but it's less pressure.
Yeah.
Because I feel so much pressure with the Spanish language because of my heritage. But with Portuguese, I feel like I don't feel as stressed when I make mistakes because it's I learned the language. So, yeah.
And do you think back in the US in particular, if you did the show in Spanish, that then opens it up to a whole different audience?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's what's so important about people embracing their culture and the languages of their, like, heritage. It's my grandma's mother language, so and you know, a lot of my family, so that it opens up a massive market. I mean, all of Latin America,
yeah,
but also, yeah, in the US, Latinos are going to be the main population. So,
and I don't know, I mean, I'm just speaking from ignorance here, but I have a sense that there will be lots of bilingual people in the US.
There's so many bilingual.
Who are much more likely to come if it's in Spanish than English,
yes,
somehow.
But also there's some, in the US, in certain parts of in San Diego, they have shows that are in Spanglish.
Yeah.
And that's like the massive market as well. People who speak some Spanish and mix it with English, but who have this Latin culture. And so that's what a lot of, basically, I imagine that I'm Mija, the first time I translate it, will be in Spanglish because of pure, like, thinking. But
so we could end up with four versions.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Let's do the listings for people who are at the festival and able to see the English version of the show this month. So tell us when, where, and how do they sit?
So I am at 9:35 at the Pleasance Courtyard in the Baby Grand every single day for the rest of the festival until the 25th. The 25th is my last day. And yeah, the show is called I'm Mija, Katie Green. And I think that's the only information.
Well, the last information is, where can people find you online?
I am at Katie G Comedy on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, or X. What are we calling it?
I don't know. Well, I started calling it X, but then what's the X version of a tweet? So you still tweet on X, and that seems ridiculous.
We're going to Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go anti-Elon and let's stick with Twitter.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really good to talk.
Fun.